Yes, so first of all, just to say, a bodhisattva means an enlightened being, and it's an enlightened being a bit like the Buddha, but bodhisattva literally translated means enlightened being, but particularly it's an enlightened being who reaches enlightenment just like the Buddha does, but then either returns to the world or decides to stay in the world until all other beings are enlightened. So the particular emphasis of a bodhisattva is altruistic, you know, it's not only to aim for their own enlightenment, but to aim for the enlightenment of all living beings, and to have that very much at the forefront of their aspiration, of their aim. So that is what bodhisattva means. And a bodhisattva is something in whom the bodhicitta has arisen, and bodhicitta translates as the heart of enlightenment. So I think you might have heard this here before, that in Pali and in Sanskrit, in the old Buddhist language, the word citta is often translated as mind, but in Indian, in Eastern culture, the seat of the mind is not up in here in the brain like it is for us in the West, but it's in the heart. Yeah, so with kind of one good translation for it would be heart-mind. So the bodhicitta is the heart of enlightenment, or the mind of enlightenment. Both means the same thing. So a bodhisattva is somebody who's realized the truth, has got to the other shore, whichever way you want to describe it, but then instead of living in bliss forever after, they come back to help other living beings in the world. And Sangharakshita, there's a tiny little image of him hidden behind there, which you might want to look at, where he's very young, in India, I think. For him, when he set up the order in the 1960s, he said that for him, metaphorically, the whole order and movement was symbolized by the thousand-armed Avalokiteshvara. So you could almost think of it as like each member of our Sangha as one arm stretching out, one arm of Avalokiteshvara stretching out, helping. Because he was saying very much like when you think about enlightenment, the bodhicitta, the arising, it doesn't really arise in an individual person. It arises more often collectively, you know. So if you form a Sangha or a spiritual community where everybody's energies are going towards living an ethical life and wanting to realize the truth, wanting to see things as they really are, then you're creating a kind of container, you're creating a space where enlightenment can arise collectively. So it's quite a beautiful image of the Sangha like this figure, you know, like this thousand-armed Avalokiteshvara. So what I want us to do first, we are going to do a meditation in this first half, but before we do that, I just want us to hear the story of the thousand-armed Avalokiteshvara and how he came to be looking like that. He's got actually 1,000 arms and 11 heads looking in all different directions, looking in sort of north, south, east, west, up, down, and within, I think, if that's 10 directions anyways. And then at the top of his 11 heads is Amitabha, who is another archetypal Buddha. And we'll hear about why Amitabha is at the top of his head when you hear the story of Avalokiteshvara. So we'll hear that. I'll say a few more words, and then I'll lead us into a meditation, which is a kind of a version of the metta meditation in three stages, but I'll lead us through that. And then we'll have the tea break at the normal time. So let's hear the story of Avalokiteshvara first of all.
The vow of Avalokiteshvara. Long ago, Arya Avalokiteshvara made this vow before the thousand Buddhas. May I be able to establish in emancipation all the living beings in the barbaric land of snow, where beings are so hard to discipline, and none of the Buddhas of the three times have stepped. May these beings be disciplined by me. May I be like father and mother to those who are now helpless. May I be their guide, leading them to freedom. May I burn the lamp to chase away the gloom of barbarism. In that country, may I extend, for as long as possible, the teachings of the Tathagatas of the Three Times. In hearing the name of the Three Jewels, may the many beings of the Land of Snow go for refuge and obtain rebirth as men or gods. May they have the opportunity to enjoy the Holy Dharma. May I be able to mature and emancipate them, each according to his own way. May that gloomy and barbaric country become bright, like an island of precious jewels. Before his teacher Amitabha, Arya Avalokiteshvara also vowed, "May I have the opportunity to establish all living beings in happiness, beginning with those in the Land of Snow. Until I relieve all living beings, may I never, even for a moment, feel like giving up the purpose of others for my own peace and happiness. If I should ever think of my own happiness, may my head be cracked into 10 pieces like the Odzaka plant, and may my body be split into 1,000 pieces like the petals of a lotus." Having made this promise, he travelled throughout the 6 realms of samsara, teaching all living beings the 84,000 teachings of Dharma by means of the 6-syllable mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum. In each realm, he freed beings from their particular miseries and taught the Dharma for those who wished to hear it. Finally, he went to Tibet, the Land of Snow. Gazing over the Tibetan nation from the peak of Red Mountain, he had a vision of countless beings burning alive in an ocean of fire. Witnessing the misery of these beings, he wept heartfelt tears. The goddess Tara and Bhakuti miraculously appeared from his teardrops and encouraged the Bodhisattva, promising to help him with the great task of teaching the Tibetans. Avalokiteshvara went among the Tibetans and taught them the mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum, pronouncing the words of the Dharma with infinite compassion. Then he entered the meditation of Bodhi mind, making a long and intense effort to dispel the misery of beings and bring them to happiness. Exhausted by his efforts, he entered the meditation of restoration. For a second time, he gazed out over the land and saw that he had not helped even 1/100th of the beings of the Land of Snow to enter the bliss of liberation. He was seized by bitter sorrow, and for an instant the thought arose, "What is the use? I can do nothing for them. It is better to be happy and peaceful myself." At that very moment, his head cracked into 10 pieces and his body split into 1,000 parts. In agony, he cried out to Amitabha Buddha, who appeared before him in the sky. Placing his hand on Avalokiteshvara's shattered head, he said, "All circumstances come from cooperative causes, conditioned at the moment of intent. Every fortune which arises to anyone results from his own former wish. Your powerful expression of supplication was practiced by all the Buddhas, was praised by all the Buddhas. In a moment of time, the truth will certainly appear." Then Amitabha blessed him and transfigured the pieces of his head into 10 faces, one for each of the 10 transcendences. He also blessed the broken body, transfiguring the torn flesh into 1,000 hands, each with its own wisdom eye, so that the Bodhisattva had 1,000 eyes, and his vision became as that of the 1,000 Buddhas of the golden aeon. On the crown of the 10-faced head, Amitabha placed himself, and he radiated boundless, inconceivable light.
So it's quite a lofty kind of a mythical story, that of Avalokiteshvara, and we can, but it's quite a potent image, isn't it, of one person sort of trying to help many beings, becoming quite despondent, and then something happening, you know, sort of falling apart in a way, having a breakdown over it in a way you could think of it. And then what happens is they realize, oh, it's not just me who can do that. You know, it's more like you just make yourself bigger in a way, and you realize actually you're interconnected with everyone and everything else. And you can do so much more if you kind of just expand your consciousness. You could understand it like that. So very, very lofty ideal. And as I said, Sangharakshita, the founder of our movement, was very, very inspired by that. I'll say a little bit more about that in the second half, how that came about, how he heard the story. But it is quite poignant as well that we're talking about this story and this lofty ideal and Sangharakshita's particular approach to the Dharma at this time when many of you might have heard by now, you know, there's quite a lot of controversy going on in the order and movement about some of the things that Sangharakshita and other senior order members have done in the past that wasn't so good and lofty. He has made a statement of kind of a confession and an apology of having acted sometimes in ways that were not even Buddhist, you know, and that have hurt and harmed others. And he very much regrets that now. He's near the end of his life and wanted to sort of really admit, this is what I have done. I very much regret it, a lot of remorse, and I ask your forgiveness. So there are some traces still around of this kind of unhelpful. There are some traces around in all of us, aren't there, of helpful, sometimes acting in unhelpful and harmful ways. And this happens even in the Sangha. You know, the Sangha isn't immune from it, because we're not enlightened. We're all kind of flawed beings, and we do sometimes act unskillfully. And what made me think, what I find very poignant is there was a piece that an older member has written recently, and I think he does this practice as a visualization practice, and he said that, you know, the myth of Avalokiteshvara is very lofty, but it also has this kind of quite dreadful moment where this person is just despondent, despairing, falls apart, breaks apart, you know? And maybe even a spiritual movement, or when you're an individual having a spiritual life, you have to go through those times when things are just really difficult, when things go wrong, when you act wrongly, when you have to apologize, when you're feeling quite wretched in a way. And it's through that that you grow, and it's through that that you can sort of become bigger. So we can understand the story of Avalokiteshvara also as a story that includes brokenness, breaking apart. And then through the breaking apart, you break through into another level of understanding and another level of being. And what I find quite inspiring, despite the difficulties that are going on at the moment in the order of having to look at this sort of unskillful behaviour, both in Sangharakshita and in other senior order members, is that there is an honesty. You know, he did write that letter. He did say, yes, it happened. I very much regret it. I apologise. And I, you know, want to make reparation in a way. And that truthfulness is important, is an important step in being able to break through to another level. So I think that's something very much to be appreciated in all of this difficulty that we're experiencing at the moment, that there's a truthfulness.